Hello, 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 and welcome to another episode of Character Reveal. It's that show where we reveal people's characters, and you know, sometimes we record episodes the same year we release them. Who would ever thought of that? Once again, it's your boy, it's your host, Dom, aka Brother Dom, all over the internet, gonna forgo the AKAs. And once again, I am joined by the victorious co-host, the adjective, not the show. Would you like to tell the people who you are?
Hi everyone, it's Stephanie, aka Captain Steph on Twitter, the Snow Queer on Tumblr, and I am excited to be here with a guest that's kind of adjacent to my real life. we've had a lot of video game guests and stuff that's more aligned with Dom's interests, but you may or may not know that I am a publishing person in the real world, dear listeners, so I'm very excited to introduce today's guest, Britta Lundin. Would you like to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Hi, yeah, I'm Britta. I'm a writer for the television program Riverdale on the CW, and I also am an author, and my very first book is a young adult novel about gay fan fiction and shipping and Comic-Con called Ship It, and it's coming out on May 1st, and I'm really excited.
That's like so close to my heart, like as like fandom trash, like who also works on YA, like it's so cool.
Yeah, mostly the reactions from people when I tell them about it are either like, tell me again what shipping is, does that have to do with like UPS, or people being like, oh my god, I love this idea and I love you, and there's usually like no one in the middle.
You could ship with UPS if you like to do the anthropomorphization, you know, like
yeah, you totally could.
FedEx,
like yeah. People ship. Yeah, I was gonna say UPS. Like people ship like McDonald's and Wendy's or like FedEx and UPS.
Yeah, like the T-Mobile girl and like the Sprint guy, The Sprint guy is gay, so like the Sprint guy.
The Sprint guy's a traitor.
Yeah. Wow. Okay, so we know where your allegiances lie.
I'm Verizon all day, y'all. You know.
With that schmarmy guy from Verizon.
Can you ship me now?
That was terrible. Look, thanks for setting the caliber of the puns for the rest of this episode.
I don't want people to have any misconceptions about what this podcast is.
The answer is yes. You can always ship him now. You could ship anything, anytime.
That's good. That's good news because, as Stephanie may have alluded to, we're a little bit of fandom trash over here on this show. Lovingly, I'd say she's more in that than I am, and that's definitely a compliment. I want to get more into it.
In the vein of people referring to themselves, we give a warning, dear listeners, before we start, just always like just about content, because we can curse a blue streak, but which we try to make sure it's a respectable blue streak and we're not offending people. And I lovingly refer to myself as trash. I'm not trying to insult myself or anyone else.
I'm trying to insult myself. But before we dive too much more into this, I would feel remiss if I didn't ask, Britta, how are you today?
Oh, I'm good. I'm really good. I was at WonderCon all this last weekend, and so I'm a little bit exhausted, and I washed my hands a bunch of times, but I'm still afraid I might be coming down with the con crud. But it's besides that, I'm feeling great.
Well, you're leaps and bounds ahead of what a lot of people at conventions do.
In terms of what, washing her hands?
Yeah, having a modicum of hygiene. That's very nice to hear. That's I'm inspired.
Yeah, I was signing advanced copies of Ship It, which was really cool because the book's not out yet, so it was exciting to like give those out to people. But in the process, I met like probably a couple hundred people, and I shook their hands and I took pictures with them. And you know, you just like get all up in people's business when you're at a convention, and it's just like a lot of humanity, which I enjoy, but it's also has a high potential to get you sick.
Yeah,
I'm just impressed, honestly, that we're recording the day after you got back from a con and you're just like conscious.
Oh, like, yeah. Let's do this thing. Yeah.
So, you were at a convention. Those are near and dear to our hearts as well. Did you do any cosplay or anything, or just kind of professional?
Just there in the professional sense?
Yeah, I didn't. I cosplay. Well, I guess I did in a sense. I cosplayed as like the version of myself that I wanted people to meet, because I knew I was going to be meeting a lot of people for the first time. So I really like was like, I'm going to wear, you know, something that really is me, but like the most version of me that I can be. And so I wore like shirts with fun patterns and like my favorite shoes, and you know, like I paid attention to my hair, which I don't usually do. And so like I do feel like if you just met me on the street, you'd be like, you look completely different than when you were at that convention, because I was like trying to be me at the convention, you know, like Britta.
I dig it. We were talking about we've commissioned like a just like a piece of art just to use for banners and stuff on different websites, and Dom asked me, he was like, what if you had to like describe yourself in one look, like
yeah,
I was like, probably like obnoxious boots, like high-waisted shorts, like side shave, like
yeah,
I'm easy because it's just like a sleeveless hoodie and a hat, maybe just a regular hoodie and a hat, but always a hat and a hood.
Yeah, a hat and a hood. Two things that could cover your head.
Exactly. Like I've mastered the look of, you know, like one of those little army caps, I guess is the style. I wear that and then two hoodies. because it's great for temperature control, right? Like say you walk outside, you know, you have your pea coat, then your two hoodies and a shirt. But then you walk in a building, it's really hot. You can take off all the hoodies, or maybe it's only a little bit hot or a little chilly. You can take off the right amount of hoodies. It's a great winter strategy, and I recommend it to all the listeners. Doesn't help me at all in summer.
Who live in places with winter.
Yeah, I know. I live in Los Angeles. I can't relate to this at all. I haven't worn a coat in, like, months, years, maybe.
I'm jealous. In New York right now, and I'm deeply jealous because we just had, like, our 8th nor'easter last week.
We hit 60 today in Pittsburgh, so that was kind of nice. It looked like it was 60, maybe 57. But.
Oh, yeah, it's like an easy 72 here. Like, I just picked some lemons off my lemon tree. Like, we might fire up the grill later.
That hurts me.
that was a sentence beginning that I did not predict. I picked lemons. That's amazing. And that's on brand for the shipping episode that we're having. So that's great. It's fantastic.
Ooh, that's like a deep cut. Just date? I'm going to say, how much did you just date yourself by referring to fan fiction and lemons in the same sentence?
I am what I am.
don't like, don't read.
You know, we've been waffling a bit. Stephanie, do you want to get into some decent, real content kind of stuff going on?
Yeah, so
I'm a bit out of my depth today.
Yeah, this is more my realm than Dom's, but we're so excited to have you on. So you talked a little bit about your book, just like the top line, your keynote. You want to tell us a little bit more about what the book is about? Yeah. As someone who has read the book and was in Supernatural fandom a while ago, I have a sense that like might have been inspired by some true events. I don't know if you want to talk about that, but
Okay, so the book is about Claire, who's this teenage girl who writes a lot of gay fan fiction about her favorite show, which is a fictional show in the world of the book called Demon Heart. And it's told in two perspectives between Claire and Forrest, who's like this young up and coming actor who's got his like first big role, and it's on the show Demon Heart. And he doesn't know anything about shipping, and he doesn't know anything about the world of fandom, but he sort of finds himself thrust in front of these fans, and he's stumbling through poorly trying to make his way. And basically what happens is Claire wins a contest to like go on a Comic-Con tour with the cast and showrunner of her favorite show. And so she gets to meet Forrest, and she, you know, gets to meet the showrunner, and she decides to like try to use this opportunity to get them to make her ship canon, and like get them to make the gay relationship a real thing on the show. And the showrunner thinks this is stupid, and Forrest thinks this is incredibly stupid. And what ensues is, you know, a lot of hurt feelings and a lot of people like not understanding where the other person is coming from, and then hopefully like some understanding. And then along the way, Claire also meets a girl and starts to like figure out that maybe all of this gay shipping stuff is coming from something deeper within herself, and she goes on a journey to figure out her own sexuality, which kind of I just described this in a way that makes it seem really earnest and like and I it's like also fun and funny, and then there's like Comic-Con shenanigans and hopefully like it's a wild ride of like Comic-Con funness.
That sounds like a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, and well, you asked if it's about Supernatural, and it's like there are a lot of shows that have this dynamic of like fans who ship like a very popular slash pairing or like a gay pairing, mm-hmm. And then like a cast or like writers who like have no fucking clue what that.
Yeah, I used to be in like Teen Wolf fandom too. So
yeah, exactly. Teen Wolf went through this. Sherlock went through the. I mean, like the Once Upon a Time goes through. Oh, mm-hmm. Like it goes on and on and on. Like there's so many shows, but yeah, I was also in Supernatural fandom, and so like it's definitely. I mean, it's not about Supernatural. You know what I mean? Like
it's about
a lot of shows, but it's definitely also about Supernatural.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know any. I never really got to watch any. I was never part of any fandoms where there was a ship that people were really pulling for that wasn't going to come true because of like homophobia or anything. The only show that I knew that really had like a hardcore gay ship would be like Adventure Time, and that's canon now, I think, right?
I think so. I haven't watched it in so long, arguing a while, but yeah, like
okay, that's the only one that I was part of a fandom that had something they were pulling for. I mean, except for. Mm-hmm. Some video games, but those are just kind of like none of the ships are really being handled to any fan appreciative degree. So
you're also a screenwriter, mm-hmm. yes, but you're also a fan and a shipper. Mm-hmm. How do you like reconcile those two sides of yourself in this book and like in real life?
Yeah, it's so weird. It's so weird because I write on Riverdale right now, which is a show with a very loud and passionate fandom, which is like crazy to me because like, I mean, I could have ended up on writing for any kind of show. I could end up writing for a show that had no fandom, but instead like my very first TV writing job was on Riverdale, which has like one of the biggest fandoms on Tumblr right now. Like a couple of the biggest ships, like it's very exciting to have gone from one side of the sort of like fandom curtain and to have like stepped out over and crossed the line, and now I'm on the other side, and I constantly find those two sides like at war with each other, like even to the point of like, you know, I used to be in Supernatural fandom, and I say used to be, I still love the show and I watch the show, but now that I write for a show on the CW, like mm-hmm. we Supernatural used to be our lead-in show, like it used to be on right before us. It was like there became a point where I feel like fandom, to be in a fandom, it requires a certain level of like wonder or of magic mm-hmm. to like give yourself over completely to this this fictional world, and once I started working in TV, and you know, our offices were just like right down the street from the Supernatural writers' room, and where we shoot in Vancouver is just like not that far from where Supernatural shoots, and we shoot in some of the same locations, and like we share some of the same crew sometimes. It's like suddenly it just became like a real show with like real people working for it, and it stopped becoming this like sort of mythical thing that I could like give my heart to, and it just became like another program on TV. Like it's kind of hard to explain, and so I still love the show, but I wouldn't say I'm necessarily in the fandom as much as I am. I have like sought out things where like I'm not in danger of like bumping into someone when I walk down the hallway or like when I go out to eat or something like that. Like so I recently got into One Direction and like Harry Styles, and like Harry Styles and I are never gonna meet, you know, like that's not gonna happen. Like I'm not gonna bump into him in Burbank, you know. Like I could still like pay to go to his show and like be surrounded by a million other fans and like sing along to his songs and feel that magical sense of like something bigger than yourself, you know, and I can feel that, and he's not like a real person to me, and that's perfect. That's exactly what I want. I just want him to be a magical unicorn on a stage.
That's fair. I think it is something, like, I don't want to spoil anything for listeners, because this is coming out either very close to before or after the book release. But that's something that you kind of get into the story to an extent, is how being close to, like, and seeing kind of, like, the gears behind, like, the man mm-hmm. behind the curtain can mm-hmm. affect your relationship with fandom to an extent. Mm-hmm. And I think about it, like, because I was a theater kid in high school, and going to, like, a Broadway show, like, there's a different sense of wonder as someone who has been on a stage, because you're not just immersed in the story, you're immersed in, like, holy crap, how did they manage that, like, that amazing, like, stagecraft thing? Like, yeah. How did they, like, those costumes are beautiful. Like, you're immersed in a different way. Like, it doesn't hurt the storytelling, but...
Yeah. Yeah, it's a different kind of experience. I think one of the things I learned when I got on Riverdale, which is in the book, because I was writing the first draft of the book as I was going through my first season on Riverdale, and so I was learning a lot along that process and, like, putting it directly into the book. It was actually a really great experience. But one of the things is that when you watch a movie or a show, you have a tendency to assume that everything that's on screen is exactly the way it's supposed to be. It's like the perfect creative vision from the showrunner, like, put into reality and put onto the screen. And so you just tend to read the text of the show in that way of, like, oh, they said this line here, and it's the exact same phrasing as a line before. It must mean something, as opposed to mm-hmm. the showrunner just forgot he wrote that line once already, you know, or this character isn't in this scene. What does that mean? When it could be the character wasn't supposed to be in that scene and it means something important and you, the viewer, should figure it out. Or it could mean that that actor had the flu that day, or their dog died or they missed their flight and they couldn't show up to work that day. Or they got a movie and they were off filming in the other movie. We had to write them out of the script at the last second. Or it meant that our location changed because a location fell through, and in the new location it didn't make sense. Or we had to move something from day to night, and we no longer had time to shoot with that actor before they had to leave and they were going into overtime. Or there's, like, a million different moving parts every time you make a TV show. Like, so many moving parts. It's a miracle that anything gets made, honestly. And it takes so many people and so much money and so much logistics to make anything happen, that it's fine to read the text, like, as it is and to watch the show and just take everything as face value. But if you're interested, as some fans are, in, like, looking beyond that and trying to figure out the motivations behind why something was made the way it was, sometimes everything on screen is intentional, and a lot of times it's just, like, a coincidence, or just, like, just the way it ended accident. Up that day. Yeah, a happy accident, a sad accident, like, okay, I guess that works kind of accident, or, like, whatever, you know? It's just, like, it's a messy, complicated, difficult process.
Yeah. So how... Like, you said, like, you're writing for Riverdale right now. It's, like, a very vocal fandom. Like, how do you, like, do you avoid interacting with the fandom? How do you balance, like, know it's very, like, much become a thing more recently because of, like, especially, like, Twitter and stuff, that you can reach out to the people who are creating the content you love and tell them what you think should happen next. Like, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I had to, it's sort of through trial and error, figure out something that worked for me. I know that when I have the advantage of knowing what I wanted when I was a fan, and mm-hmm. when I'm a fan, I want to feel like I want to, like, follow creators on Twitter and on Tumblr and stuff like that, if they're on Tumblr. And I want to get those behind the scenes peeks. And it's always fun when you get a little bit of interaction, or they like a tweet, or they respond to a question or something like that. But I also definitely wanted my own space to interact with other fans and, like, squee over stuff or the latest pictures or the latest teasers or whatever, and, like, analyze it and figure out what it means and all of that stuff. And I don't necessarily want to feel like the showrunner is over my shoulder, like reading my tweets and like reading our like thirst posts about whatever, you know, what, you know, like you want it's like Phantom Spaces should be Phantom Spaces and they're not necessarily for creators, but you kind of mm-hmm. also want a little interaction. And so with that in mind, I made a decision that, like, I don't track Riverdale on Tumblr, and I don't search for anything on Tumblr or anything like that. I don't follow any fan blogs. I follow a couple fan artists, but you know, for their art. But on the other hand, like, if people want to reach me, like, if they tag me in something or they tweet at me, like, I'll read it then. Like, I feel like I've been invited into the space. Like, if mm-hmm. I'm tagged on a Tumblr post, then I'll go check it out and maybe throw it a like or maybe comment or something like that. But I'm not going to, like, seek out the commentary or the meta or I'm certainly not reading the fic or anything like that. I do look at some of the fan art. I decided that was okay. And then like, if people have questions, yeah, you got to draw the line somewhere. And then if people have questions, like, I'm always answering questions on Tumblr and stuff. And, you know, I try to make it like a fun space. Like, obviously I'm not going to give spoilers and I'm not going to engage in any fandom debates. And I try to make it like a positive space for fans to come. But you know, anytime you open yourself up like this, you do get a stream of fans' anxieties and worries and concerns. And some of that can feel like a lot of negative energy, but I think a lot of what it is I'm very invested in this character, or I'm very invested in this ship, you know, like, promise me everything's going to be okay. And a lot mm-hmm. of the times, you know, it's a TV show and I know what's going to happen through the end of this season, but I don't know what's going to happen next season yet. We haven't started writing it yet. We haven't even officially been picked up for a season 3. So I can't make any assurances to anybody, nor would I make assurance to people that, like, their favorite character is going to be okay, or their favorite ship's going to be okay. Or, like, I can't tell anybody what's going to happen in the future of Riverdale, because I wouldn't, because less spoilers, like, I'm not going to give that away. But also I can't, because I don't know what's going to happen in the future. Like, literally no one does.
Yeah, it would just be irresponsible to say, yeah. Oh yeah, it's going to be fine.
Yeah, yeah. But a lot of what I get is just like, you know, protect this character, you know, protect the ship at all costs. Yeah, protect my son at all costs. It's like, protect your son. This is a TV show. Like, our job is to create drama. You know, our job is conflict and... if you want production, I think that's what fan fiction is for. Like,
yeah, read your coffee shop AU. It'll be fun.
Yeah, yeah. Coffee shop AUs are great. They're amazing. They're perfect for fan fiction. I think that if we tried to do that on Riverdale, like, the execs would descend on us and be like, what are you guys doing? Like, this isn't, you can't do this on TV.
The biggest conflict is that you made the drink wrong? Yeah. This isn't good drama.
Yeah, I'm trying to think if there's a show that even operates like that these days. I don't know. I don't think you
could
do that. It
would be funny to see it in, like, a, like, Supernatural occasionally has, like, an AU episode where, yeah. like, they're thrown into, like yeah. even, like, in the first season they have, like, that episode where, like, Dean and Sam get thrown into, like, a perfect world, and Dean's like, this is too perfect. I don't deserve this.
Yeah, I know, which is, like, so Dean. Yeah, this week they have their Scooby episode, which I'm really excited for.
I saw about that.
Yeah.
I feel like I stopped watching a while ago. I just couldn't keep up with it, and, like, I kept hoping for things to happen that weren't going to happen. But I feel like every so often I come back for, like, one of the special episodes. Like, I watched the one with, I don't remember if it was a 200th episode or, like, was also the musical episode.
Yeah, it was the 200th.
The girl school.
Yep, that one's great. I'm very much looking forward to the Wayward Sisters spinoff. There's a, mm-hmm. they're still, you know, 13 years, still putting out good stuff.
And, yeah, it's wild.
It's wild, yeah.
Gosh, would you say, to pull it back to the book, would you say that writing for the show versus writing for the novel, like, was it different? Like, I mean, because you're using kind of both sides of your brain in the novel writing, like, your fan side and your scriptwriter side.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. So the novel started out as a screenplay. I wrote it as a movie. And I was going to try to make it as a movie, try to drum up some funding and get a cast together and make a little indie feature. And then it turned out to be my writing sample for Riverdale. And they read it at Riverdale and loved it. And I met with them and loved them. And so I got hired on Riverdale. And then not too long after that, I met with the Freeform Books people, who are the publisher of the book. And they reached out to me and they were like, we love this screenplay. We think it would be a great young adult novel. Would you like to write it? And I was like, I've never written a book before. I've only ever written screenplays. Yeah, sure. Let's do that. I had always loved reading YA. I had never aspired to write it, but I was like totally down with the idea. So then I was basically adapting my own screenplay into a novel. Like it was like a novelization of the movie, basically. So I would like have the screenplay open in front of me, and I would like read a scene and sort of internalize it and think about what it would look like on the page. And then I would write it in novel form. And my editor, like, bless her heart, had the most, she was like, structurally, this is great. It's already working wonderfully, which of course they had, because I had done like multiple drafts on the screenplay before it even, so like the outline was great.
Yeah, so you had like a solid plot.
Yeah, like the structure was there. But she was basically like, but like, you got to do things like what, like, stuff that you just don't do in a screenplay. Like, what is your character thinking? And I was like, oh, that's the actress's job. She'll figure that out. Like, what is the character wearing? Oh, that's the costume designer's job. She'll figure it out. Oh, what does the room look like that they're standing in? Oh, that's the production designer's job. They figure that out. It's like all this stuff. I was like, oh, God, this is basic shit that you learn how to do when you learn to write books. And I just didn't do it in the first draft. So then my next draft of the book was a lot about like putting in the internal monologue of like, what is Claire thinking and what is Forrest thinking during all of this, and like describing the world, like bringing the world of Comic-Con to life on the page, which is a challenge for a screenwriter, because I mean, most, like, if you look at a screenplay, it's just dialogue and like the sparsest of text. It's like mostly, it's like 80% white page, you know, and just a little bit of text down the middle. And so like trying to figure out how to like use my words to take something as complicated and wonderful and diverse as like Comic-Con and like try to put it into words was like scary and challenging. And then not only that, but I was writing the book at the same time that I was working on Riverdale. So I would go back and forth between like, I would work in the morning on my book. So I'd wake up around like 5 or 5:30 in the morning and work for like 2 hours on my book and then get ready for work and go to work and work at Riverdale until like 6 or 7 PM. So my brain was like constantly in two different worlds. And I would find myself like sometimes working on my book and my brain would drift off and I would come up with an Archie story or something while I'm supposed to be working on the book. And then I'd be like in the writer's room, like talking about Veronica, and my brain would like drift over to Forrest and I would come up with something for the book. And I'd be like, no, Veronica, like constantly torn in two directions. But the nice thing about working on in the writer's room is like anytime you're stuck or you're spinning your wheels or you're just having an off day or you don't really fully understand a story yet, there are 9 other writers sitting around the table who like have your back and are also ready to pitch and like pick up the slack, you know, like we're a team basically. And when you're writing the book, it's like all you. And if something goes well, like congratulations, you did it. And if something goes horribly, it's like it's all you. Like you got to figure it out. You got to write your way out of this yourself. But the flip side of that is you have total creative control. I mean, I worked with my editor, and a copy editor and all that stuff. But you know, on Riverdale, it really is very collaborative and very much driven by what our showrunner's creative vision. And we're always trying to make Roberto, who's our showrunner, happy and pitch ideas that I'm always thinking, like, not necessarily like, what does Britta want to see in this episode? But like, what would be cool? What's going to make Roberto go, I love that. And so you're just using a different part of your brain when you're like trying to service someone else's creative vision as opposed to like your own all the time. So it's two completely different things. And there were certain days where I'd be like, I hate my book. I only want to work on Riverdale. And then other days I'm like, oh, Riverdale's so frustrating. I just want to work on my book. And in the end, they were both great.
Nice. Yeah, I definitely, I didn't do writing in college, so I don't like have like a workshopping background, but I definitely do like, there are some times when we'll be like tasked by someone like, come up with a plot for this book. Like, we want a book about this. Let's do it. And in that, I find it's much easier for us to all like sit in a conference room and bounce ideas off each other until we have an outline, as opposed to just like one of us going off and trying. Like, it's just like the more iteration, you just have to do so many more iterations to hit on it sometimes when it's just you.
Yeah, totally.
So I kind of had a question based on just fandom interactions. Since you kind of spoke about trying to work towards someone's creative vision in that, and we spoke about how fans sort of have contact. So some of the fandoms I've seen before can get a little bit raucous, rambunctious, and sort of maybe come to some conclusions from the fiction, but maybe not so much come to conclusions about it, but sort of use it to fuel different conversations or different debates that are kind of framed poorly. In some ways, it's people saying, here's why your ship is illegitimate versus mine, or saying, oh, such and such character did this thing that was objectively bad. The writers wrote that it was bad, but maybe fans will pick it up as a good thing. Have you had any occasions where people sort of misinterpreted your writing or anything like that, or kind of took the wrong message away from the show? I guess I'm talking about, you know, like South Park and Rick and Morty, where there will be jerks in that show, but people kind of see them as the good guys and kind of like treat people the way that character might, as if it was a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I'll preface by saying, as I mentioned, I don't really seek out fandom discourse that much, although I know it's happening.
Right.
But I'm not necessarily out there like somewhere reading it. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think, like our show Riverdale is about, it's a teen drama. And so there's love triangles. Well, there's love drama happening and relationship drama. And then there's also this mystery, like in the first season, it was like, who killed Jason Blossom? And they had to solve like the murder of one of their classmates over the course of the first season. And in the second season, there's a serial killer that they're trying to catch.
The usual lighthearted fare.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, there's when the stakes are that high, literally life and death, like a lot of sort of heightened stuff happens on our show, and people like we were talking about coffee shop AUs, like the stakes are not whether or not your coffee was made correctly. Like the stakes are literally like, should this person be locked away in an asylum, or should this person should we turn this person into the police for murder? Like those are the stakes of what we're talking about. And so I think when you're dealing with that, it's easy to say, oh, this person is evil because this crime was illegal, or like this person is a bad person because of what they did to their friend. When, you know, there's just it's easy to dismiss characters because of their actions on the show. But the truth is that every character on the show has made mistakes and done things that they regret. And they're also young. And so hopefully I wouldn't want to be judged by some of the things I did when I was 16 years old. And so hopefully there's room for them to grow over the course of the show and, become better people and become better at making decisions. And I would hope that the fans give those characters who they don't like generous leeway to grow into better people. But, you know, it's hard because you always feel passionately about a show and you feel passionately about the characters. And so if fans are watching the show and they feel really passionate about certain characters, then it's like, wow, we did our job correctly, you know? Like, all you can ask for is people who care very deeply about the thing you're writing. So if they care very deeply in a way that's different than how I care, you know, I'm okay with that.
it's hard to get too upset about people really liking a character you wrote. Like,
yeah, yeah, exactly. I just posted this on Twitter today, but I was on the Goodreads page for my book for mm-hmm. another reason, and I happened to glimpse one of the recent reviews was a 1-star review, and I try not to read the reviews of my book whether they're 5 stars or 1-star review, but I did read the first sentence of the review, and it was something like, I hated this book so much I haven't been able to stop thinking about it for a week. And I was like, honestly, that's the goal. Like, I would have preferred you liked it so much you couldn't stop thinking about it for a week, but if you couldn't stop thinking about my book for a week, I think that's a success.
That's a...
At least it's stuck in your brain.
Yeah, that yeah. leaves an impact. No one ever yeah. talks about things that they thought were meh. It's like, oh, yeah. I loved this. I hated that. What about all the five out of tens you've read in your life?
Yeah, exactly.
Nobody remembers those.
Forgettable. The worst thing you can be is forgettable, I guess.
Exactly. And I don't think you get, at least from what I've noticed in any kind of discourse I've seen online, you know, especially with gamers, they're hyperbolic about everything, is you normally don't get a 1-star for doing something of 1-star quality, you know what I mean? Like, most things, if they're competently made, they're at a certain level just out of, it exists, and it can be read from beginning to end. That means it's at least 3, I guess. Mm-hmm. In most video games, you'll see, you know, you'll see like 5s, 4s out of 5, but then they'll see the 1 review. I hate this because, you're like, oh, that's not a real reason. You're kind of just mad because there was something that didn't jive with your interests. So to elicit that kind of reaction, it makes me feel like there's something of great value there, because people don't tend to get bent out of shape over something that was just like, I didn't like that.
Yeah. 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 A phrase I've been trying to use more in my own life is, oh, it's not for me. Which is, I used to like when I really didn't like something, but it was like well made and I could understand why other people would like it, I used to like be like, oh, this TV show is dumb for X, Y, and Z reasons. But really what I'm saying is, it's just not for me. It's just like, it's just, I don't relate to it. It's about people I don't care about or something like that. You know, it's just like, someone's going to love it. It's not for me. As opposed to shows that are like actually genuinely bad, or shows that are like genuinely offensive, in which case, yeah, I'll like go on a rant about it. But if it's just not for me, it's just not for me.
Yeah, that's a fair way to be. I think it's, I do have a conversation with people a lot about when something is objectively bad. People say you can't be objective about art, and I beg to differ. but I don't think you can be objective about what's like enjoyable.
Yeah.
Like, I recently watched the Sharknado movies, and I enjoyed them immensely. But they're, to me, they're objectively not that good. but there's, like, a level of self-awareness that lets you be entertaining. But I can say things like, well, you know, the CGI here was kind of not that great. Some of the acting was a little bit stilted because some of the, so many of the cameos weren't, they're not professional actors. And the story kind of was just completely made up and just deus ex machina the whole time. And things like that can be really, really enjoyable. But I don't know. I kind of look at things. It's like there's like the McDonald's patty, and then, you know, you have your burgatory, mm-hmm. and then you have like real steak. And I don't think there's anything wrong with enjoying a McDonald's burger. It tastes good, and it's probably not that healthy, but you wouldn't go tell somebody, you know, this is a high quality steak on this beautiful roll. Like, you wouldn't say that. And that's fine. It doesn't have to be that.
Yeah, yeah. Things can be not high quality and still be enjoyable. Totally. I totally agree.
Yeah. I mean, I'm
I saw Pacific Rim Uprising yesterday, so I totally agree as well.
So you said you don't seek out fan discourse. Is there any sort of thing that comes your way, sort of like reviews or ratings or... Not that I'm asking about those, but do you ever get like do you guys ever get feedback, like anything like that? I don't know the best way to ask that.
Yeah, I know that there are people in the writer's room who read like the weekly review of every episode or something like that. I don't find that fun personally. but they do, and that's fine. And so sometimes they'll come in and be like, you know, this website loved this week's episode, or this website thought these three things were dumb. And it's like, okay. I don't know, maybe part of that is because I'm not the showrunner. And so, like, it's ultimately not even my call whether we move forward with a certain storyline or something. It's like, if the AV Club hates a specific storyline, like, it's up to him whether he wants to take that note from the AV Club, you know, and I don't think he would. But if he wanted to, it's not even my call. You know what I mean? Like, my job is to show up to work, have a bunch of ideas, and, like, whatever ideas the showrunner likes are the ones that make it on the board. I don't make the final creative decisions about anything.
It's got to be kind of liberating in a way.
And sorry, what was that?
So that's got to probably be a little bit liberating in a way.
Totally liberating. Yeah, totally liberating. And the same thing goes for, like, fan reactions. You know, I think we do sort of have a gauge of fan reactions just because we watch all the episodes together as a group, and we live tweet them together, which is fun. It's like one of my things I look forward to every Wednesday night is, like, getting together with the gang and live tweeting the episode. And as we're live tweeting, like, someone's always surfing the Riverdale tag on Twitter and, like, you know, reading people's, you know, I'm shook or stuff like that, like wig snatch or whatever they're saying. So we kind of get a live gauge of what people are thinking about the episodes, like, as it's happening. But I would say that's the most that we ever seek out fan reactions. I guess I also get a gauge just by, like, the number of people who tweeted at me that week, you know, saying protect Bughead or whatever, or, you know, whatever ship, you know, I mean, they tweet about all the ships, not just Bughead, but that I guess I kind of have a running gauge of whatever hashtag protect I'm getting that week. But I don't look for it. And maybe my showrunner does, but I kind of doubt it. He's not really an internet guy. I think mostly what you try to do is you try to write a story that's compelling, and you try to make choices that are going to be exciting for people. And you try to have, like, real emotional stakes and stories that are rooted in something relatable and emotional, and character arcs that go somewhere. And you hope that if you write a show that you guys think is good and we're all kind of in it together, then the fans will go along on the ride, and the I don't really care about the critics, I guess, but I guess the critics can go along on the ride. And you just kind of hope that if we like it, other people will like it too. Like, we can't all be wrong about it, but, you know, of course we can. But and then there's so many levels of people who are involved in this. There's not just the 10 writers plus our showrunner. There's also every episode gets notes from the studio, which is Warner Brothers, and the network, which is the CW. And we get notes at the outline stage, at the script stage, at the rough cut stage. The editors are weighing in on story decisions, like, oh, I don't think we need this scene, let's cut it. The actors are weighing in, you know, I don't think my character would say this line, can we do it this way? Like, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of voices trying to make these stories the best they could be. So I think it's also a mistake to be like, oh, this is just Roberto, this is just the way Roberto wanted to go. It's like, it's a true collaboration of lots and lots and lots of people. And if we're all sort of steering the boat a little bit and we kind of steer it astray and it goes into waters that fans don't like or critics don't like, well, we tried. We're just trying to do the best we can.
Yeah, that's all we can do.
Yeah.
So it kind of touches on the idea of, like, everyone collaborating on this, like, how much, like you don't have it, like you're saying, like, you don't have any final say on anything, but, like, how much of, like, if you were like, I think we need this representation in this, or, like, something like that, like, how much of that, like, because that's another theme in the book is getting, trying to get the showrunner to get some representation, like, how much do you try to speak to that and make sure that it comes in a, like, organic way? And
I mean, our showrunner is pretty open about that stuff and pretty interested in those issues himself. I mean, he's Who's you know he's a Latino dude who's gay, and so, you know, he's already part of multiple marginalized groups. Like, he's aware of the issues of, like, representation and stuff like that, and cares about them. So that's nice. There's in terms of like how we make decisions, like we all write the stories together. We all sit in the writer's room together and like dream up like the Archie story, the Betty story, the Veronica story, and the Jughead story. And we weave, and then the parents and whoever, Cheryl and Josie and Kevin, whoever else, Reggie is in that episode. And then we weave all the storylines together and we make an outline, and that outline gets notes from the studio and the network. And then the writer of that episode takes the very collaborative document that we've created, and they go off to script. And, you know, sometimes we collaboratively write episodes and sometimes we don't. And so there's just like a lot of hands in the pot, but mm-hmm. there's always an option to like speak up at any time. Like we're all people who at this point know each other really well, and we're all sitting around a table all day long, and we eat lunch together, and we watch movie trailers together, and we talk about the news together, and we talk about these characters all day long. So like if there's ever a time to like bring something up, like it's an open room, it feels like we could talk at any time. And I know my showrunner has, like, I've advocated for having, like, queer women on the show before, like, many times. And I know it's something that he cares about, too, and was something that he was very interested in figuring out a way to do it. And it took a while. I mean, our show has a lot of characters, and so it's difficult to service all of them. And at any given episode, there's just characters who you're not seeing on the show just because we have so many of them. So figuring out the right
cast like that.
Yeah, exactly. it's like Lost or something, like the files, and they had a hill with like every single character on the show, like on the hill in silhouette. And you're like, that's like 60 people on that show. Like what? That's kind of how it feels sometimes. We just have like a literal town as our cast.
That's so exciting.
I'm very excited for the world to see it. It's a really cool kiss. Like the music swells, it goes into slow-mo. It's like everything like teenage me would have wanted, you know what I mean? Like my heart hitches every time I see it. And so I just hope the fans really love it too. And I guess I hope AV Club loves it. So that's something that I think he was aware of, and when we finally did it, you know, there was a little nod towards like, okay, you know, this is happening, and thank you, Britta, you can stop pitching more queer women. And I'm like, oh, you think I'm gonna stop now? I'm not gonna stop now.
Just because there are two.
We only have two. Yeah, like we can keep going. I can do this all day.
There's numbers that are higher than 2, 3, 4, maybe even 40.
Yeah, 40. I know, we have a giant cast. Yeah. So who knows what'll happen in season 3. But yeah, he's definitely open to all that stuff. It's really nice. It's a really awesome, welcoming, wonderful room to be in.
That's very cool.
That's really cool. That's you want to get into the system and change it from the inside. That's how you get the rep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's absolutely my goal.
Very nice. So I guess another question about your book, I guess it kind of builds off everything we've been talking about so far. Is there anything that you kind of want, you know, your readers to take away from the book? Like, is there a central, I guess, like theme or moral, if we wanted to get kitschy with it?
Yeah, I think, one of the things that Claire goes through her character arc is she meets this girl Tess, who's a fan artist, and along the way Tess is like very comfortable and open about her sexuality. She calls herself homoromantic pansexual, which is just like new terms for Claire that like kind of blow her mind and make her intimidated and freaked out that Tess knows her own sexuality so well. And then on the flip side, Claire is someone who's super open and vocal about her fandom and open and vocal about wanting her gay ship to go canon and why this would be good for the world and why it's good for the show and why it's good for queer representation on TV. And Tess is someone who keeps her fandom on lockdown and doesn't like tell her friends on it and about it. It's sort of like her secret internet persona. And it's not something she's like public about when she goes to high school. And so both of them meet each other and they sort of learn to own this part of themselves that they previously had been scared of or ashamed of or had anxiety about. And so I remember being in high school and not wanting to tell anyone that I loved the X-Files, even though I loved it so much. Sometimes it was like all I could think about. It was like the thing that got me through like the hardest days of like middle school and high school was just like thinking about Scully. And so I remember being there. And I also remember at other times in my life feeling like I didn't know how to tell anybody that I was gay. And that even if I thought they would accept me, I knew it would like change things. And it was a conversation I didn't want to, I just didn't want to have to have it. I just didn't want to have to talk about myself in that way. And now I'm comfortable talking about both things. And I've like sort of, so I wanted to write a book about where I had teenagers who were comfortable talking about both things. Because I know that there's teenagers out there who are worried to talk about their sexuality or don't quite understand their own sexuality yet or are going through that process. And then maybe fandom has changed. I feel like it's a lot more socially acceptable now than it was when I was a teenager. And so maybe there aren't as many teenagers who are afraid to be open about that. But I know from my own experience, when I start talking about Ship It and when I start talking about gay fan fiction, like I see faces light up. And I feel like the Slash fans like come out of the woodwork to like talk about it. And I'm like, oh, interesting. Oh, did you like gay fan fiction? You never mentioned that before. And like all these people who I didn't even realize were like into this are suddenly talking about it. And they're like, I didn't know you liked that. It's like something that we whisper about in the shadows instead of something that we like talk about or like tweet about or talk openly about. So I don't know. I just wanted to, just like make it okay for us to talk about this stuff because both things are totally okay. And I just feel like, the more shame we feel, the less, the worse off we are. So like, let's get that out of there.
It's really funny how you like even this was, oh God, it was like 8 years ago now, Jesus. But when I was studying abroad and I was friends, I hadn't really been friends with the girl I was rooming with. We both went to the same college, but we were in the same like Japanese classes together. She was like, we're studying abroad at the same place since we're both from here, do you want to room together? And at one point one night I was like messing with my Kindle and I was like, and she was like, oh, what are you doing? And I was like, oh, just putting some fanfic on my Kindle. And she was like, oh, well, I have a huge PDF of fanfic if you want it. And I was like, is it the complete works of Maya? Because Sarah Reese Brennan had just pulled all her fanfic because that was like the time when one did that before one got published. So she had just pulled all her fanfiction that she had left it up as a PDF for people to download before she pulled it all entirely. And I was like, haha. Haha, I already have that. I guess let's be friends. And we're still friends today.
Yeah, totally, totally. Yeah, I remember once when I first moved to LA, I went to a panel where I saw Eric Kripke, who's the showrunner of Supernatural, talking. And I went with a friend, and she brought a friend. And we all went to drinks afterward, and I was like, oh, yeah, I saw this thing on Tumblr. And she was like, oh, yeah, I also saw that on Tumblr. And I was like, oh, you're on Tumblr, huh? She was like, yeah. And I was like, so you, like, are you, like, do you, like, ship anything? And she was like, oh, yeah. do you? And we were like doing this dance around each other where it was like trying to figure out if the other person was like as deep into it as we were and like ready to bail at any point. If they were like, oh God, no, I don't do that. Be like, no, yeah, no, I didn't think so. I don't do that either. Yeah. Just like, but in the end, like eventually now we like follow each other and we're like good friends and she ships everything I ship and it's great.
That's what friendships are all about.
Yeah.
Liking the same gay shit together.
Yeah.
I found out so many more people are in some sort of fandom than I thought. I have a really close group of friends that I met through college. And the first time I saw some of them was in the gym doing, I guess, what you consider really macho, manly things. And then the very next time I saw them, they invited me to come down the house and have some beers. I'm like, whatever, I'll day drink. And I walk in and they're watching Orin High School Host Club. And I'm like, what is this? What are you guys watching? And the guy's like, oh, it's anime. And they're like, oh, so desne. I'm like, I don't know what this is. What are we doing? They're like, this is the best. You got to watch this, man. And turns out they were just like huge anime nerds this whole time and just happened to also go to the gym. And it was, I'm like, wait, so what kind of stuff are you guys into? Like Dragon Ball Z or Sailor Moon? They're like, that's like normal stuff, man. Like, come sit down. We have some stuff to show you. Like, I never would have predicted this. This is very nice. And to this day, we still talk about all the different fandoms and stuff. And I'm trying to be an evangelical to get people to go to conventions and just, you know, cosplay for the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's so cool.
But I haven't really talked about any ships.
I love it when they open up a little window in their heart to you, you know, and you get to peek inside. That's so wonderful.
I was trying to tell somebody that, you know, Dragon Ball Z has opened up so many men to the greater anime genre and opens up to so many more, like queer fandoms that we didn't know we would have been into. All it took was just one guy screaming at the top of his lungs, and it's like, do you want to see more of this? Let me interest you in, I don't know, any anime that has a gay ship. And then you kind of get into that, and then you learn things about yourself. And then, you know, fast forward 10 years, you're a whole new person. Hypothetically, of course.
This is Dom's biography, I was
going to
say.
Oh, that's good stuff.
So was X-Files your first fandom? Like, is that what you would call then?
Yeah, for sure. X-Files came first, and it like hit me hard. And I think once you have one fandom, it's really easy to just watch a new show and immediately use fandom as your like way to experience and appreciate a new show. And so once I like had X-Files fandom as a template, I was applying that to like every new show I watched. And so I remember like in the early 2000s, like being really into the West Wing and like shipping things on the West Wing. And I was like in West Wing fandom, which like none of my friends could relate to this. I was like completely off on my own, like, like on the forums, on, you know, like AO3 didn't exist, fanfiction.net didn't exist. Like, it was just like, I was just like in the deep fanfic web, and like off on my own. I just felt like a completely different person when I was at home on my dial-up internet than I was when I was in high school.
Oh, dial-up.
Dial-up, man. It was rough. It was rough. But I remember doing a lot of downloading fic. Because, like, you couldn't be on the dial-up that long because your mom would be like, I need to use the phone. Like, get off the internet.
Like, copy-paste it into a Word document so you could...
And then my brother would be like, what are you reading? And I was like, a short story. None of your business. Get away from me. It's not your turn to use the computer right now.
Oh, my God.
Family computers.
This is deeply relatable.
Oh, no.
Stephanie, why are you in the basement all the time? Just using the internet. Reading a story.
See, you two were being productive with your internet time. I was looking up how to capture Mew in the first Pokemon game. Spoiler alert, you couldn't. So, they were all lies. People love to lie on the internet, and these were lies that didn't even hurt anybody. They just wasted your time. And then the fanfic, but
I think that's true though, because like now, like even like now, like even knowing that it's useless to do so, like, if I come out of a movie, like, and I see, if I'm going to see a movie, I probably see it opening weekend. Like, I come out of a movie and I'm like, oh man, that scene, I can't wait to read fanfic of that scene. Has someone written that fanfic yet? And I'll come home and then be, like, disappointed that there are only, like, 8 Star Wars The Force Awakens fanfics that were written based on the trailer, like...
Yeah.
Or, like, where is my Power Rangers 2017 femslash? Like, yeah.
Does that exist now yet, do you think?
I think it does now. But, like, the day after, like... Or, like, I came in from Justice League and I was like, that was a miserable movie, but I kind of want to read, like, the Flash Cyborg slash right now, like... There was none of that.
That's, you know, that's how every fanfic is born, is someone searching for it and being like, God, I can't find it. I guess I have to write it myself. So it's on you, Stephanie. It's on you.
It's turned out in mixed reviews in the past. Every once in a while, I'm like, I'm doing this myself. And then I'm like, I'm an editor, not a writer. Why am I, what am I doing?
Spreading your wings is what you're doing and fixing a wrong in the world.
Yeah. You're doing it for the fandom.
Yeah.
So you're so much better than me. I just go home and, like, I wait, like, about 10 hours so that people more committed to me will get to it before me so I can go check TV Tropes to see all the cool stuff that I missed. I'm very often disappointed because it's like, here's trivia that you may have already known. It's, yeah, I already knew that. I want to see, like, all the fourth wall breaks or, like, the weird... I don't know. I love reading the tropes so much. It's, like, it's a sickness. I don't know what I get out of it. It doesn't make me a better person. I don't feel any more smart or smug after I do it.
You're better at critiquing media because you're recognizing the patterns.
I hope so.
That's just, I'm spitballing.
I guess I don't, as long as I don't end up like CinemaSins, I'll be fine. That's a hate train that I don't mind being on the bandwagon of. So besides X-Files, did you have any other, I mean, do you have any fandoms now, I guess? Let's get out of the past. Do you have any fandoms right now that you're active in?
Yeah, I mean, I think the most active one I'm in right now is like One Direction / Harry Styles, which has been very fruitful. It's a large and passionate and very creative fandom, which is great because anytime I feel the need to read anything specific, like it probably exists. It's been around for a long time, so long enough that there's like a deep well of works made about it. And a lot of the members of 1D are now on tour, so there's constantly new fun stuff happening and like new theories and new photos. Harry is on tour right now, so one of my greatest joys is getting on the internet every morning and finding out what he wore on tour last night, because it's always something wonderful and it makes my morning. They're like, oh, pink ruffles, great, I love it, keep doing you, Harry, keep doing you.
That's delightful.
Yeah, he's delightful.
This is true.
I've been seeing I guess it's not really fanfic, but I think the fanfic's gotta be coming because I've seen mild fan art. Stephanie, as you know, and the listeners know, I'm a huge Overwatch fan, but what is also a thing people are a fan of is all the players in the league. And I've been seeing people doing like the incorrect quote thing. Like I think they do it with Hamilton sometimes, just like taking a quote from one thing, but applying it to characters of a different thing.
Yeah.
So I've been seeing people doing that with like the players in the league. And I'm like, this is like real people fic, and I'm totally here for the idea of it because it's completely hilarious. And but it hasn't done any, haven't seen any of the tweets that have like gone into the realm of uncomfortable or like rude, because these guys were totally on Twitter like a lot.
Yeah.
And I think they like kind of, most of them kind of, what's the word, like amp it up, or like not queer baiting, but like the, hey, if you want to write fanfic about us, I'm totally here for it, like I'm who I am, but if you want to have fun about it, go ahead.
Yeah.
But it was just a funny thing because it's like, oh man, I feel like these guys are all, there's the real person and there's the character of them. I didn't know people were doing that. I didn't know anyone else cared about like the players that much.
Yeah. It's funny. Well, while there's joys in being in a giant fandom like Harry Styles, there's also joys in being in the nichest of niche fandoms where, you know, it's like you and like 20 other people are really into this one thing and you're just like, yeah, we're all trash and we're all here for it. Let's do this.
We're all having a good time, all yeah. 20 of us in this room.
Yeah.
I'm kind of enjoying the idea so far of fandoms that are getting split between like the old heads and the new kids. Mm. And to the point that there's the old people, then the old people, and old is just like they were there before, like, I don't know. So the people that were there before, and the people that are there a little bit before that, and the people that are there now, and they're all fighting with each other, so there are all these little, like, micro-fandoms within the greater fandom. And, you know, people aren't seeing other people's, like, they're accepting their fanfic as fanfic, but they're not accepting that canon as canon. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, yeah, you know, nothing after, you know, 2005 counts anymore, so... Your stuff's based off non-canon, but I'll appreciate your fiction. Like, no, it's all canon. It's like, eh. So, it's a funny little thing I'm seeing. I like it.
Yeah, yeah. That's another one of the themes of the book is, like, basically you can just decide for yourself what's canon and what's not. Ultimately, like, who gives a shit what the actual creator decided? At a certain point, once you, like, are in fandom long enough and you've read enough fanfic... Like, I've read so much more supernatural fanfic than actual supernatural exists in the world. So it's mm-hmm. like, who's to say that the original is, like, the best or even the most correct version? Like, can't I just decide, like, no, you know what? That AU where they, like, own a bed and breakfast in Vermont is, like, that's my can't. Like, that's real for me. And Supernatural is just basically an AU from that one. Like, I can just decide in my own head, like, what is real, what's true, and what's not. And what happens in the book is the struggle between that idea of deciding for yourself what is canon and what's not. And the very real reality of, like, if you're wanting more representation on TV, then you can't just decide in your own head that these characters are gay, because it doesn't actually help make TV a more inclusive place. You know what I mean? It, like, you actually do yeah. need those characters to be gay on the screen for other people's sake, if not for your own. Like, I want television to be a gayer place in general. Because I want, like, teenagers who are turning on the TV to see people like them. And you know, and I want it to be more racially diverse and diverse in all of the different marginalized identities. You know what I mean? But,
yeah.
But, like, I can just, you can just decide things in your own head. And fandom sometimes decides things, like, as a group. And, like, just, like, makes things real amongst themselves. Which is great. And I'm all for that. But I think you also need the other side where you, like, need things to be real on the show as well, like, for political reasons.
Yeah, that was something, like, that I definitely, like, really related to that argument, like, as a theme, like, or as a thread going through the book, just, like, because I think that I've seen a lot more lately the idea of, like, kind of tying your, whether your ship is canon or not, to, like, whether it means anything, which is, like, kind of sad to me because, like, you can, like, there's so much fan fiction, you put so much love into this ship, like, it still means something to you, even if it's never real on the show.
Yeah.
But it also is the same, like, the flip side of that issue is, like, but isn't it important that there's queer representation or whatever yeah. other thing, like, and just trying to find a balance of that and, like,
yeah.
interrogate yourself as to whether you're not, whether, like, I want this because I want Dean and Cass to fuck, or, like, I want this because Dean would be a like, groundbreaking bisexual character, like.
Right, right.
And, like, where's the balance there?
Right, right, finding the balance. And I think part of that balance is, like, Dean and Cass can be in love in my head. And they are. They're just in. It's just a fact. Like, I don't watch the show.
That's just true. Yeah.
Yeah. I can't watch the show under another assumption. Like, that's just like, canon.
There's
in my,
no
in
other
my
lens.
Head.
Like.
Yeah. And so of course, like, I want that ship to go canon, but I also realize that ship going canon is not necessarily inherently, like, more important than other queer characters on television. So it's like, yes, I want my ship to go canon, but if it doesn't, but I get five other queer characters somewhere else, that's a net gain. Like, that's it's not necessarily important that, like, my specific ship go canon. It's just important that we get more queer characters on TV.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. That's, like, I was reading the, like, the auto straddle breakdown of, like, queer women on TV.
Yeah.
In the last year, and it was, like, it was a mediocre year for queer women on TV, and that's awesome! Because it's so much better than last year when it was a shit show.
Yeah. I think I read that too, and I just remember reading it and being like, oh, next year Cheryl and Tony get to be on this, and I'm really excited.
Very nice. I'm totally here for the Net King. That's why I had to tell all those Widow Tracer nerds that it was their ship that was bad, not the conceit of it. But
it's like, Tracer can be a lesbian. This is just a bad ship.
And then bam, I'm still happy about that. I always in jest, though. People can ship whatever they want. I find fun in the rivalry. So I know Death of the Author is kind of a big thing, which is really helpful for people's, I guess, fanfic in general, but also ships. And it also is useful when the creator is still around making poor decisions for the medium, hypothetically.
J.K. Rowling.
But,
who said that?
So I did actually want to bring that up. So there is that kind of thing where the original Harry Potter works are done. Like, they're complete. That story is over. But I have a just general question to both of you. This isn't really like an interview question, but more for my general understanding. Does Death of the Author apply to still ongoing properties? Like, is that a thing?
Or
is
that kind of a, that's kind of like the same thing as like making your own canon, like deciding for yourself what's canon. Like, because you could say, like, I accept the Harry Potter original 7 books as canon, but I'm not interested, like, but I don't look at the movies or like Cursed Child as part of canon. Which is, I feel like, a fairly common thing. But, like, at the same time, like, she, like, the original creator had a hand in creating those, like, consciously and consensually. So, like, that's really just, like, you making your own decision about what you like or don't like. And, like, Death of the Author, anything you put in the world, like, can be interpreted however someone else is going to interpret it is more with it.
Oh, okay.
Comes down to, I feel like.
I just wonder, because if I interpret something in a show, but then something comes out later that could cancel that out. I don't know. I was just asking sort of as a food for thought thing.
That's my thought, yeah. I don't know. Do you have a different opinion? Or?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I sometimes think about this when people contact me on Tumblr and ask questions about Riverdale. Like, oh, what did you guys mean by this? Or I don't know, like, for example, FP gives Jughead a present on his birthday in my episode in season one, but you don't see what's in the box. And so people are like, what did his dad give him on his birthday? People wanted to know. And we had it, we had shot it, but we had like cut that scene for whatever reason. And I was like, I think I said I would answer the question after the season was over, because I knew what we had shot and cut, but ultimately, like, this is a situation where I would be like, if I told them, like, am I then creating a canon? Like, then is it canon if, like, I say what we shot and then cut? And then later, if we decided we wanted it to be something else, like, would we be disobeying canon because I once said in a Tumblr post that it was something else? Or do Tumblr posts not count as canon? Or do tweets count as canon? Does it not count as canon because I'm not the showrunner? But like, if Roberto said it, then it's canon. Like, all of that. It's like all, yeah, like very so muddy waters. And if like later we're like, oh, we should say that what was in that box was this, and it helps us with this episode in season two. Then what if I'm like, oh, you can't do that because I said on Tumblr that what was in the box was this. Like, then I don't know. Like, yeah, exactly. Then like, have we like written ourselves into a corner? So it's like all that stuff. That's why I try not to say too much on social media that we haven't absolutely made clear on the show, just because for that reason I don't want later someone to be like, oh, we could technically still say that it was this, and I'll be like, oh, whoops, I tweeted about it.
Like, yeah, well, I think that's tricky too, especially with something that's ongoing, because you can look back at what you've already made and build it into something that had a different meaning that it might have had intentionally or yeah, like originally,
for sure.
Like, I think about like the quote unquote famous to a given extent, but like the main thing arc of the Adventure Zone that one thinks of when one thinks of the Adventure Zone, like, because it was a D&D campaign, like there's shit that happens in the first like arc of that campaign that comes back later on in a way that makes it seem like foreshadowing and like hugely important, but it was just like some stuff that was in like the like regular like the like prefab campaign booklet that Griffin was using to start out with that he later looked back at and said, how can I tie this into the story in a way that will be meaningful to fans later on? Like,
yeah.
And yeah. So it's like
yeah, and it's tricky when you're making something that's ongoing and you start publishing it before it's finished. Like, my book is complete and it's done, and I was able to go back and do many drafts of it from beginning to end before it gets published, right? So it's like, that's mm-hmm. the text that I want to put into the world. But Riverdale, we start writing it and shooting it and then airing it before we finish writing the finale. So there's times like late in the season where we could be like, oh shoot, I wish we had put that in episode 4, but it's too late now because it's already aired, you know, you can't go back and change it. Mm-hmm. It's like you're like, it's like the cement is drying as you go, and and you can't change it. But there have definitely been times where it's like, oh, that episode is shooting right now, maybe we can still rewrite that scene to incorporate this idea that would help us with this future episode. And like, someone, we have the call sheets hanging in the writer's room, and someone will go look at the call sheet and be like, oh, that's shooting today, it's not shooting till 5 p.m we have time. And it's like, quick, go rewrite that scene that shoots today, and it's going to help us with this episode. So it's like that kind of stuff where you're like constantly trying to like stay ahead of the game in order to like keep the canon as in the way that helps you the most.
That reminds me of that's pretty funny. I remember how Scott Pilgrim did that. Like, they started writing the movie when they only had 3 of the 6 books done. So that about at that time, the movie and the books diverge completely and go in completely different directions. And it actually makes it, I actually prefer it that way. So there's not like a, well, the book was better, the movie was better. I mean, I think the books were better, but that's, it's not like they did a bad 1-to-1. It's just like, this is like a 1 to an A. It's completely different.
Yeah.
In that, yeah, I guess that's because they were just writing them as they were writing a different thing. Mm-hmm. Unlike your book that was written all at once, which is, mm-hmm. is good. Yeah, I was just curious about that, the death of the author and the canon stuff. The only properties I know that like willfully went against their own canon for the sake of it was apparently Dragon Ball Z in GT. Apparently, like, the Dragon Ball Z movies weren't canon, and they very much couldn't be because some people were dead that were alive, and some people were alive that should have been dead or weren't born yet or stuff like that. So it was like, what if these people fought a guy? How about that? Or what if this thing happened? What if we did a whole series that didn't count because nobody liked it, so we erased it ourselves? You know.
I think there's a tried and true method in anime is to have movies or arcs that are just, like, not even filler. Like, I feel like a lot of, like every Naruto movie I've ever watched, like, is just, like, a standalone adventure that doesn't have anything to do with anything. Like,
I wouldn't know if that's an anime trope. I'm glad to know that, because I want to watch more animes that do that. More anime that does that. Whatever the plural is. It's like, hey, here's a story. We wrote our own AU. It's an official AU, but it's not canon, even though we made it. Good stuff, good stuff. Any other questions we're going to go through, Steph?
I don't think so. I am kind of curious, like, looking, like, at your book and how, like, immersed in fan culture it is. Like, and you said at the beginning, like, it's something that, like, when you explain it to people, people are either excited or completely confused. Like, is this book, are you thinking of this book like in terms of audience, like for readers that are already like in the fandom world, or do you think people will come to fandom through this? Or
yeah, it's written in a way where it hopefully it's accessible to people who have never experienced fandom at all. So like early like it defines its terms, you know, like she has to explain what shipping is to her mom early in the book because her mom doesn't know. And that's there specifically so that readers of the book who also don't know what shipping is, like in the first 20 pages, it gets defined for them so they know what the hell the title of the book means. So hopefully like people who are in fandom are like, oh my God, I'm getting all the inside references and like the deep cuts and like know exactly what you're talking about when you talk about this stuff. And I love it. But people who aren't in fandom aren't completely lost, and like it can enjoy like a good story. Like I think regardless of whether you're in fandom, it's a good yarn, you know. but then it's also told in two perspectives: one from Claire, who's deep in fandom, and from Forrest, the actor, who's sort of frankly baffled by the whole thing. And is a little rude about it at the beginning, and until he slowly starts to understand it a little bit more. And so maybe you could even be a reader who starts reading the book from the perspective of Forrest, who thinks that, you know, these teenage girls are hysterical and over emotional, and they care about the wrong things. And they're overly entitled as well. And then, you know, maybe some of those things are true, or maybe some of them not, and everything's a gray area. And hopefully you go through the book and you sort of come out the other side with a little bit more understanding and hopefully a little bit more empathy. I would hope that fans who read this book, like, come away with a little more understanding for the tricky position that we put like actors in, when it's like you've been cast for this role because you're a good actor and you're handsome, and we want to look at you on TV. You weren't cast for this role because you necessarily have the social skills you need to interact with a fandom of like teenage women. And yet that's part of your job description sometimes. But it's not something you necessarily went to like acting school for. So, it's a tricky job they have to do, and there's a very steep learning curve from the time they're cast to the time they get thrust into the spotlight. And so hopefully this gives us a little more empathy for them. But I would also hope that, you know, any of those budding stars who find themselves in this position may want to pick up a copy of Ship It at their local bookstore and help them have a little more understanding. Context. Yeah, for, like, the fans who, like, love a show very deeply, and maybe why they might love a show very deeply, why sometimes a TV show can have an outsized importance on a person's life. And why a ship, particularly like a queer ship, can really feel more personal than it might for other people.
Mm-hmm. Very solid.
Yeah.
If fandom is a monster, I can't imagine. Oh yeah, I think I don't know. I don't want to say too much, but I do feel for the actors or whatever kind of celebrities have to go from a room of, you know, overly energetic, overly zealous teenage boys or girls to an opposite, I guess you could say, quote unquote, kind of room. So, you know, like a Teen Wolf panel to like a Flash panel, like, or something like that. It's like, oh man, everybody here is very, very energetic in completely different ways. And I wasn't ready for the shift.
Yeah. It's almost like you want all of these actors to go through some kind of like fandom counseling or something beforehand. Of like, here's how to talk about ships. Like, here's how not to piss off your fandom. Here's how to make fans and not alienate them. Here's what to do if you find yourself in a gay ship, but you think your character's straight. You know, like, it seems like it should be sort of mandatory training for any up and coming star of a show that's going to have an avid fandom.
Yeah,
especially because like it's so, like, it feels like building your, it's similar to, I mean, being an author. You have the same problem. I don't know if there's the right word, but like you're kind of expected to build your brand as a person outside of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, on, like, a lot of, like, book publicity is, especially in YA, is dependent on the author having a platform already, like, whether that's on Tumblr or Twitter or somewhere else, or, like, as a bookstagram or something, like, something where people are already there paying attention to your words and will buy your book. And, like, to have to, like, create that and, like, maintain that on top of doing the job that you actually want to do.
Yeah.
I've seen it destroy a lot of people. I think it's the hard part of, I guess the not so hard part, the part that makes me not want to give people excuses is sort of knowing what you're doing with your fandom. like, and when it's really appropriate to be shocked, right? Like, so, for instance, like, you know, you watch Rick and Morty or something. It's like, okay, these guys probably don't need the most amount of, like, I guess, like, sensitivity training towards, like, if someone's going to have a gay ship because, like, who their fan base is. But they probably need some kind of training that's, like, don't offend people. But if you're right, if you're doing it, like, from, like...
Don't be a dick to women.
Yeah, don't be a dick to women. Which, I mean, I guess those creators didn't have that problem. It was the fans that did. But a show like Teen Wolf or Supernatural or something, it kind of feels like they're trying to have their cake and eat it, too. Where they're, like, you're writing a show that... It seems based on the idea of, like, you know who your fans are going to be for this show, and, like, you know how they're going to respond to it. So for the actors to say, oh, I'm shocked that someone had a gay ship for this. Like, really? This is the exact kind of show that typically does. And that's where you're getting your money. Like, the creators, I think, have some idea that we're going to get a lot of teen women to watch this show, and they're going to get into the fandom and do the hashtags and just the exposure and all this. We're willing to engage with that. But we're not going to get our actors to a point where they understand that, you know what I mean? So right. then we'll, on the other hand, we'll say, oh, you know, they're just so entitled, you know, they're hysterical. It's like, you knew you were cultivating this, and that's why you did it. It's very wrong. I don't know, that seems very immoral to me to try to do that.
Yeah, I agree. Especially if you, it's so predictable. I mean, if you look at a show like Sherlock, where it's like, that show has two characters, and they're both men, and you've made them like best friends. Like, they love each other, like, romantically or platonically. They love each other. Yeah. So it's like, no one can look at that and be like surprised that a strong ship came up around that show. You know what I mean? Like, even in the pilot, they're making gay jokes about like how people are going to think they're in a relationship. So like they were aware, like in the pilot, like in the dialogue of the pilot, like, you know, like they're like mistaken for gay, for like boyfriends, you know what I mean? Like, so it's like everyone knew. So then to like turn around and be like, oh no, these girls are crazy, is just like,
it's just disingenuous and gaslighting almost to me.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. I'm not a fandom person that much. I wouldn't try to get that kind of fandom and then say, oh, how did this happen? Oh, you mean to tell me this video game where you like your prize is women and you like hurt all these people has a fan base that like people are a little bit violent? Who would have thought? I can't believe we cultivated this. How did that happen? Please give us your money. yeah, games have been rough the last few years.
Yeah,
like games have been rough since they came out. I guess we're getting better. I guess there's a lot of. There's more representation than there was. I guess we're making positive steps. It's doing hard something. To defend. well, Britta, before we go, I don't know where we at are on time, but I always like to ask people who are seem to be prolific guests, if people found out we had a podcast with you, what's a question they'd be very upset we didn't ask you if we didn't already?
Besides from like some Riverdale spoilers that you couldn't answer anyway.
Oh yeah,
like am I gonna protect Jughead?
look, we'll ask you that. I'm not gonna say we can get the answer, but I don't know, just sort of the things about like, you know, either the book or like, you know, getting into Riverdale, because I've seen so many like videos online with voice actors I like, and you try to look at the interview and it's so many of the same questions, and you're thinking, why don't they just ask this one little thing? It's not a spoiler, it's not like on episode 52A kind of thing. It's just like, what did you like about X kind of thing. Is there any questions like that you think people might want to know, or you just have seen them in your mentions or something, you haven't got to answer them?
I think a thing people ask me a lot is like how I got on Riverdale, because it is such a popular show and such a coveted show, and it's and I wish I had like a better answer, like if you did X, Y, and Z, you too could be a writer for like a cool CW show. But the real answer was that I had written a lot of screenplays that were technically good, but never actually got me anywhere and didn't get me any jobs and didn't get me an agent. And I think it's because there was something about them that was a little bit safe. They felt like just like they just felt like a show, or they felt like a movie, but they didn't feel like a movie that only I could write or a show that was made specifically for me. And then when I was thinking about writing Ship It, I had the idea for Ship It as a screenplay. And I was a little bit scared to write it. I was very scared to write it. I was terrified because of like, what if this was a script that I actually ended up making as a movie and I'm going out there and I'm doing press for this movie and I'm standing on a stage and I'm saying, you don't know who I am, but I'm Britta Lundin and I made this movie about gay fan fiction. And like, then that's like my thing. Like, that's my brand. Like, that's what people are like, who is that girl? Oh, right, right, right. She's the one who made the movie about gay fan fiction. Yeah, I remember her. Like, and that like kept me up at night, like being like, God, is this really, do I want to own up to it on this level? Like, I'm cool like telling people about it and stuff, but do I want to like tell the world in this way?
Is this my brand forever?
Yeah. And then it's funny to be saying this on a podcast in which I'm talking about gay fan fiction for like an hour, but yeah, so it was like really, it was kind of like intimidating and it was scary, and it was scary because it was so personal. And then I decided that because it was scary, that's why I had to write it. And I was like, maybe nobody could care about it, maybe it never goes anywhere, but I have to like prove it to myself. And I wrote it, and I wrote it, and it started winning some screenwriting awards, and people started reading it and liking it. And there's this phrase in screenwriting and in writing that the specific is universal. And I think this is so specific that it's weirdly universal, that people can relate, if not to the gay fan fiction, then they relate to a character who loves something so much with her whole heart that she would like do anything for it. And I think that's something that people find really endearing, and it makes them want to root for Claire. And so this was the script that, an assistant read it and she loved it. And she was an assistant to an agent. She's like, I'm going to make my agent read this. He read it and loved it. He sent it to Riverdale. They loved it. I loved them. Sent it to Freeform Books. It sold as a book. Like, all of this happened in the course of just a couple months. Once I had like done a couple drafts on the script and started getting it out there, like the momentum happened quickly. And I think it was because people saw a script that was very personal. There is no easy way to get on to become a TV writer, because it's really hard. But if I had a piece of advice, it's like, write the thing that scares you and write something that's really personal. And it might surprise you who relates to the thing that you feel like only you know about.
Solid.
Nice. Yeah. So heartfelt.
Was that too genuine?
No. I like to think this is a genuine show. It's either like just being completely ridiculous with like the puns from before, or being genuine. That's really what this is about.
Our brand.
We have a brand going.
Genuine
on.
Puns.
Yes. Exactly. No, it's just you know, like, that's the whole motto we have is, you know, people are more than just what they write. And, you know, when people are writing what they feel and speaking what they feel, I think that's really important. You know, because we talk a lot about representation. You two were talking earlier about how representation matters for people watching it. I had a conversation with somebody about sort of like racial representation, where, you know, once you get to a certain age, there's a level of you should kind of not need that representation so much, like you should have a level of confidence in yourself, was their thesis. And I'm like, I can see that. I feel confident. My parents were able to luckily instill that in me, but I'm like, sometimes the representation is for other people, right? I watched a really good video. It was South Korean people talking about Black Panther, and their opinion of Black people was changed from the movie for the better. And I'm like, so see, I didn't, that movie, I mean, it made me feel great. I loved it, but it was also
like,
good.
Don't get me wrong. I love.
Don't get me wrong. I think I do agree. I think kids need to see themselves on TV, but sometimes it's about the outside groups seeing you for valid. But also, my point with this rambling was, sometimes it's good to hear representation of like things that we love too. Like, it's not always. It kind of sucks when everything has to just be, oh, hey, it's all right to be queer, or it's all right to be a person of color, or it's all right to be marginalized. But sometimes it's good to see, like, oh, hey, but here's some inspiration. Like, you know, since we're all so multifaceted. So hearing you say, you know, write about, you know, what scares you is, I think that's also really good for people to hear. So if there's any, like, younger people listening to this, that might be something that helps them like break out of their shell a little bit more, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So thanks for that. That inspired me some. So, and I'm not a teenager anymore, so, you know. Steph, anything else we should probably be asking or getting to, or?
I don't think so. We can ask the good social media questions. Mm. If we were a listener and wanted to find you out on the internet, where would we go?
Yeah, I'm all over the place. I'm on Twitter, I'm Britta Ships It. And on Tumblr, I'm Britta Lundeen. And on Instagram, I'm Britta_Lundeen. And I got Britta Lundeen anywhere I could. But there's this one Swedish dude who's got some of the better Britta Lundeen handles. And so I had to get creative.
Damn him.
Anyone in Sweden wants to like go ask him, why do you have Britta Lundeen? Your name isn't Britta or Lundeen, but you're sitting on these and you're not using them. That'd be great.
did the Twitter handle come from the book, or did it predate that?
It predated it. It came from this idea. Britta Ships It came from the idea that like, yeah, if you name it, I probably do ship it. Like at the time I was knee deep in like many, many fandoms, and I was like, yeah, I probably ship it.
Okay, can we be so brazen to ask you for four top ships?
Of mine?
Ooh.
Yeah, just off the top of your head. They don't actually have to be your top four, but just four really good ones you can think of.
Okay, well, I have to say Dean and Cass. That one's pretty good. When I first started watching The X-Files, I shipped Mulder and Scully like everyone did because it's the main ship of The X-Files. But the first time I ever searched for slash fiction on the internet, it was after an episode with Mulder and Krycek, who's like sort of the evil agent. And found like a flourishing community writing Mulder Krycek, and that was like eye-opening for me. Who else? Should I give a West Wing ship since I talked about the West Wing?
Absolutely. I know at least one person who would be pleased.
Well, you know, there's some common ones, which are Josh Donna or CJ Danny or CJ Toby. And I liked all of those, but where my heart was, again, was like the one weird slash ship that no one else liked, which came after like a Josh Sam episode in season two, where I was like, oh my God, Josh and Sam go way back. They're like old friends, and suddenly started shipping Josh and Sam, and I wasn't alone. That's like one of those moments where you watch an episode and your eyes would open, and then like you go on the internet and you see that there are like a whole weird 1% community of other people whose eyes just opened too, and you're all like, did you see what I saw? And they're like, yeah, I saw it. Did you see it? Yeah, I saw it.
Friends.
And then for my fourth ship, I'm going to be very self-serving about this and say Cheryl and Tony from the hit CW show Riverdale on Wednesday nights at 8 p.m. Because hopefully you it's also saw bitches. That slow motion kiss and loved it as much as I did.
Awesome.
We'll have to get a GIF and like when we tweet the episode.
Yeah. 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 I'm
sure. Oh, that's going to be great because when this will go out, that'll definitely be in Jif form by then.
Don't make fun of me.
No, I'm not making fun of you. I'm doing the compromise that I stole from Idea Channel.
Is that a compromise? That's not a compromise.
No, it's a compromise by not picking either one. Because, yeah.
It's terrible.
I know, but you could have said Jif.
I could have done that.
Yeah.
But... No, it's Mike Rignetta from the Idea Channel. He'd be like, so you know, people have animated GIFs. Sometimes they use GIFs, but I just call it a Jif. And you're like, you use all three in this episode, and only one of them can be correct. And he's like, nope. But yeah, there will definitely be an animated low resolution image to go along by the time that this episode comes out. So we'll have to put that with there.
Cool. Yeah. Tom, you want to hit the art eats?
Yeah, it's good. Oh, man. So much nostalgia already. So, if you want to hear more from us or see more from us, that would be easy. You find us on the internet. You could start with Twitter at CharacterRev. That's two R's in the middle. You can find us on Instagram at CharacterReveal or on Facebook if you're still using that. They already have all of our data. Might as well keep giving them more. So you just search CharacterReveal on Facebook, you'll find us there. You know, we post our episodes and various pics of us. You can find me pretty much anywhere on the internet at Brother Dom. Anywhere that I want to be found, that is. That's B-R-O-T-H-A, not the hard E-R. I would have said that on purpose. You can find Steph on Twitter at Captain Steph, on Tumblr at The Snow Queer, and on Instagram at Hella Steph. I think that's it. You can also so you can find this podcast, characterreveal.simplecast.fm, Google Play Podcast, iTunes Store, Stitcher, anywhere you'd get your podcast at. You can listen to it on the browser. And we're uploading episodes on YouTube now. There's not extra video to go with them, but that's just somebody's bag. You can throw us in your watch later, you know. And every other week we're releasing a classic episode just to get some more exposure on that. And if you want to head over to patreon.com/character reveal, you can support us a little bit. Every little bit helps. We're going to, you know, start releasing outtakes, little funny moments, sort of audio montages, that sort of thing. And the highest tier, I think, is to hear the episodes a little bit early, and we'll shout you out at any tier. And we now formally wrote for the Lady Geek Girlfriends blog. Teardrops, it's been a ride. LadyGeekGirl.wordpress.com. You can find all our old
posts. Backlog's still there.
The backlog is there. You can read all the stuff we used to write. If you're ever looking for people to give you fan critique, Stephanie and I have lots of posts there, so check that out. And
we just officially closed it down today. So we're
so melancholy. It's weird, but you know, things move on. The world keeps going. But now we're in the character reveal adventure, and it's been a great one, and we've had many great guests so far, and such as today, we had another great guest. So Britta, we want to say thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you guys. It was a blast.
Yeah. Lots of fun. And you feel completely character revealed? Do you feel that your character has been revealed?
Yeah, my character is just is so revealed. It's just out there. It's like my character is nude right now.
This is just, so now, yeah, I guess we're just cosplaying ourselves now. That's the question we should add to our... How would you cosplay yourself? full circle. Yeah, catch Riverdale Wednesdays at 8 on the CW. We're not getting paid to say that. We just believe in it. listeners, thanks for hanging with us for another one. And we'll catch you on the next one. But until then, see you later.
Bye.